Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The South Dakota School of Mines and Technology launches a new venture this week called Steam Cafe. It's a partnership with SDPB and Hay Camp Brewing Company. The project features South Dakota Mines faculty and staff exploring topics ranging from cutting-edge research to history, and you can be a part of it. STEAM Cafe, it's an acronym for Science, Technology, Engineering, Arts, and Mathematics, is scheduled for 6 p.m. Mountain Time the third Tuesday of each month at Hay Camp Brewing Company. The first talk is slated for tomorrow night. The first event features Matthew Boombach. He's assistant professor and director of choirs. I spoke with him last week about his innovative approach to the Steam Cafe.
Well, I was actually just contacted about this about a month ago. I know that this is a brand new initiative through School of Mines, and it's kind of a way for us to get out in the community and share some of our expertise in a fun and interesting way. So I was contacted from a representative at the university saying that they were looking to start this, and they thought about our music program for introducing the idea for doing the first Steam Cafe because it's such a unique program. We're sitting here as these music professors out in our own little building at School of Mines, this, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics university. Why in the world do you have this great choir and great band program out here? Talk a little bit about that and tell us really what your contribution is to a STEAM university.
Mm. And so I think a lot of people, when they hear that, they think, is that a lonely space to be out in your own little building? But it's not. It's really fully integrated and an important part of what Mines does. Explain that a little bit.
Oh, it is, absolutely. Our students are, they're very driven, very hardworking students. And so many of them were the top high school musicians. And they decided that they didn't want to go into music full time. So they go to this great university sitting here in the middle of Rapid City, South Dakota, where they can just grow their brains so much, grow in these fields and go into the sciences, go into engineering. But they didn't want to stop making music. So we have this wonderful little family of students that are so greatly involved. They work hard every day. They really put a lot into their studies, but then they come into the music program and they find this place of release where they're able to kind of express those things that are not so analytically driven, where they're able to kind of work on that emotional intelligence and so many other skills that are important to the world around us, but may not be directly related with learning their careers.
And these students would really all know each other. And I mean, they know each other in the orchestra or in the choir or in the band, but they know each other from class as well. So talk a little bit about that notion of, you know, this is also an opportunity to build teamwork and build collaboration and trust of one another too, and in a different environment than in a lab or in a classroom.
Absolutely. You know, that thought that in an ensemble music making experience, students do build community and build trust. It actually reminds me of a study that I read about from about 3 or 4 years ago. There was a Swedish choir that was hooked up with heart monitors. And what they found while they were singing is that all of their heartbeats synced up. So they, it's this brilliant metaphor for music. You know, we want to be this one big community, but for our hearts to beat as one is a little bit deeper than most people think of it. But what happened when they were making these corporate decisions of, we're going to breathe from here to here, we're going to slow down our breathing, what happens is their bodies just get in sync, and you get this kind of collective community that you wouldn't get anywhere else unless you have that intimate connection of spirit, mind, and body all happening at once.
You mentioned that many of these students were the top musicians in their schools. That anecdotally then sounds like there might be a correlation between the kind of students they are and the kind of music they were able to make. What sort of research are you aware of that makes some of those connections between music and brain development?
Well, there have been a number of studies that have happened over the course of the last 20 years. We know specifically that through the study of music, we're able to change and grow the brain well into adulthood in people that are not involved in the arts or some sort of repetitive task like this that's artistic in nature. Quite often, certain parts of brain development slow down in the mid-20s for most people. But for example, the the growth of myelin coating, which is this spiral that happens around the nerve fibers in the brain. For most people, it slows down around the age of 23 to 27. But for those that are involved in the arts, through repetition of these artistic processes, the myelin coating continues to develop. And what happens from that is our communication in different parts of the brain speeds up. So a number of studies have actually looked at people who started playing musical instruments or doing music study around the age of 7, and they found that they have the most myelin coating happening in their brains. But we can continue to develop it into early adulthood and even into later adulthood, which says that it's not just important for kids to be involved in music, but for college students and for adults and for seniors, so that we can continue to make this brain development and brain plasticity, which is really the word we're looking for, to continue to happen well into adulthood.
All right, so that it goes from singing in a choir to playing the cello to drawing and painting, or how broad is that when you say, you know, people are involved in the arts and that repetition of that process?
You know, to be perfectly honest, it goes with anything that is a repetitive skill-building task. So if your thing is gardening, and you continue to develop your skill through that repetitive task of gardening, and you're continuing to do something over and over and over again, you're going to continue to build that myelin. But the great thing about music is it's a focused, guided activity where we get these groups of people together. So you have the concept of not just doing a task until you get it right, but you do it until you can't get it wrong any longer. So through music study, we're really working on that task. Nobody wants to be a mediocre musician. So it gives us the encouragement to keep on going until we've mastered it. And that's really where that brain development comes into effect.
Do it until you can't get it wrong anymore. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the choir program and, you know, knowing what you know about how this program needs to fit in to the overall, school's philosophy, but yet seeing the students come in who are really at the top of their game. How do you program and develop them to the next level, yet feed who they are as majors?
That's an interesting question. I think that all of the brain research that I've looked at tells us that through the repetitive task of music making, our students are going to get better. But the philosophy that the music professors at Minds have really adopted is that we want to be aware of how this works so that we can advance our students. Basically, we know that by doing this task, by structuring our rehearsals in this way, for example, we don't run a song from beginning to end that often in the rehearsal process because we know that that's not the best way for students to work towards memorization. So rather, we show them how to break things up so that they can memorize things more effectively. We don't just perform for performance sake. We try to get into the ideas that are embedded in the music, the emotional intelligences that we talk about, the issues of society and community that we talk about in the poetry of music. All of these things are an intentional, it kind of works as like an intentional framework so that we can guide our students, talk about the process, and then make connections. I had an interesting rehearsal today. We talked about details in our choir rehearsal today, and we talked about aesthetics. I wanted my students to emphasize certain words in a poem so that we could make the performance more interesting for the audience. And then we kind of switched the focus, and I brought up the example of why was the iPod so appealing back in the 90s? Huh. And it wasn't just that you had this technology in your pocket. It's really that it looked great. People were drawn to the aesthetic of the iPod. They wanted something that worked well, of course, but it was a status symbol. So how do we take these principles of aesthetics and design and work them into your future career as a civil engineer? Can you make that building beautiful and not just functional?
So how does that translate to a piece of music then in the sense that, you know, it's a matter of emphasis or artistry, or, you know, make the connection between, say, you know, an aesthetic design of a piece of technology a bridge or a pipeline to, you know, a work of art that's been around for centuries.
Well, just like any of those beautiful pieces of visual art or any structure that's really visually appealing, we have melodic contour. We have these melodies that rise and fall, and knowing how to make them rise really beautifully and smoothly, and knowing how to kind of milk the ending of a piece of music is an important part of the aesthetic principles of music itself. We have dynamic contrast. It's really important to know that when you want to make a certain point or elicit a certain emotion, you're going to do it with a louder dynamic. You're going to do it with a softer dynamic. You're going to do it with maybe a more strident tone, or you're going to do it with something that's going to be a little more clear or bell-like. So understanding what's possible and learning to paint on this canvas of blank sound with all these different colors is really what we try to do in music.
I'm imagining a rehearsal, and I'm imagining a student who has come from, the mechanical engineering program, and then is in the choir, and you're having these conversations and talking about contours, and all of a sudden she or he just like solves a problem that is unrelated, and that light bulb goes on. Do you have moments like that where you can sort of see a student, for one thing, they're walking away from, and like you said, this is a moment for release. They're walking away from a textbook and they're coming into a different environment. Mm-hmm. So like getting in the shower when the best ideas come to you, you're in a different context. Do you see that happening where kids or students are, problem solving or making connections that they didn't make before from the work they do in the choir room that would apply to their studies or their future professions?
Oh, absolutely. I think we have those aha moments quite frequently.
Yeah.
And part of my job is to really push to make those things happen. I think of one experience that I had with a student. I have this wonderful audition group that's actually going to be a part of my lecture next Tuesday, the Master Chorale, which is our most select vocal ensemble. Right now it's 10 singers. At the beginning of last semester, I asked the students, I have this vision. I found this great piece of music that uses synthesizers and uses all of these electronics, but what I want is to create a visual. I'd love to perform this piece of music in the dark, and every time you sing into your microphone, I'd like your face to light up. So I asked one of my electrical engineering students, will you take on this project? Will you actually make this happen? So this student kind of took it upon himself to lead a project where he built a device using this microcomputer called an Arduino. He built an audio input and he hooked up the microphones, and we built 7 of these devices that in performance, every time they sang into the microphone, an LED light lit up their face. So this student through this process said to me, I've thought about these concepts before, but now I think, number one, I'd really love to find some way to do this in the music field as well.
Yeah.
But the other outcome of this was, he led the other students in the choir in this really weird evening of doing soldering of circuitry. So he's soldering all of these circuits and teaching our applied biological science and mechanical engineering students how to solder. And he had a light bulb go off. He said, I think I'd really love to teach at some point in my career, because he found this natural instinct for guiding other students, guiding his peers through this process.
Right. Okay, so when you say that, now up until this point, I've been thinking all these students are going to go into fields other than the arts, but that this program has meaning for them, in many layers. And all of a sudden, I realized that students could come out of the South Dakota School of Mines and Technologies into an arts career, and it would just be an arts career that nobody's really imagined yet.
That's right? The thing.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of education. I mean, we are no longer preparing students for careers that we can foresee.
Right.
10 years from now, there will be all of this new technology that I can't conceive of. Mm-hmm. It's going to be these students, these digital natives who grew up, with the curiosity for not just how does that phone in my pocket work, but I'd like to build this and I'd like to improve it and I'd like to imagine the next thing. So combining the sciences and creativity is really the missing link that quite honestly I see we stray away from so often. But anytime we believe that one field lives in isolation, we're missing the big picture.
What about what you program? Is that different than if you were at a teaching at a university that had a more traditional liberal arts program? Would you be choosing different musical pieces than you are now?
Oh, absolutely. And it's not based on the difficulty and it's not based on the worthiness of the piece of music, but I definitely see myself looking at repertoire that's going to more appeal to my students. A friend of mine recently introduced me to a piece from a pop band called Muse, and they took this great piece of music by Palestrina and rewrote all the lyrics and provided this beautiful polyphonic choral work that was originally a sacred piece, but now it's about drone strikes. So it appeals to what I might do with my students because, number one, I've got students that are going to build and fly these things. Right. But number two, it also talks about a lot of ethical principles that we're facing in society. I mean, when you get into technology, it's not just about the beauty and wonder and convenience that it can add to your life, but you also have to talk about the ethics of technology. Drones are really great for photographers, and I'm sure that they serve a really great purpose, even for our military, but it's complicated when you talk about what you can do because of the availability of that technology. So picking music like that gives me the opportunity to have those discussions with my students, not just about arts or creativity, but also about ethics.
And we talked earlier in this conversation about, you know, the value of playing music, older than necessarily what you might think, you know, keeping that going. When you graduate from college, there's often a drop-off with that. It might be time to put the musical side of you away for a career, and I'm guessing many of these students are not going to want to do that. Are there ways to sort of keep that part of our lives intact as we move into the, quote, real world, end quote?
Absolutely there are. I know about 10 years ago, Chorus America did a survey, and they found that in the United States, there are over 1 million choral singers still active as adults.
Wow.
So you've got community choirs that serve a variety of different purposes. But as I look around and I see South Dakota, which is definitely a more rural community than my background in Florida, I see that there are still holes, and there's definitely a need for more community arts organizations to allow people to sing and play instruments well into adulthood. We have this huge population of post-college graduates, people that are in their 20s and 30s that want to still be involved, that may not be attracted to, say, a church choir or more of the classical organizations that are going to sing symphonic works. So we definitely have a hole. But when I also look into the arts and access to the arts, I also see it as kind of a social justice issue. Arts access is really available to people that are in the upper middle class to wealthy. So when you look at our underserved populations, I wonder here in South Dakota what kind of arts access there is for our Native American population. I know across America, what kind of access is there for our homeless population? What kind of access is there for our prison population? These are huge underserved communities that really deserve that arts access as well, so that we don't just make the arts a class issue.
Right. It seems to me from many Native American communities that the arts is already integral into their culture and how they grow up in a way that maybe some of the students from, you know, even a South Dakota city like Sioux Falls don't have access to. Where creating art and music is just part of who you are and what you do. Do you think that a student at the university level could kind of transform to, you know, hey, this was a class in high school, this was an ensemble in college, and now it is just part of who I am?
I hope so. I mean, that's really my ultimate goal. You know, because I'm not preparing people to receive bachelor degrees in music performance or music education, then my goal is really to make them arts lovers, arts patrons, arts participants. And, you know, if I can lead somebody on a journey to making artistic endeavors a part of the fabric of their being, then wow, I'm doing my job.
Yeah. Well, this has been an exciting conversation. Let's close with some of the details about the STEAM Cafe and your presentation Tuesday. At what time and where do people go? Who's invited?
So this is going to be at 6 p.m. and the community is invited. It's not just for the School of Mines community. It's going to be out at Hay Camp Brewery. And if you come to this first STEAM Cafe, you're not going to just hear me talk and blab on about brain research, but you're going to hear South Dakota School of Mines and Technology Master Chorale perform along with me. So we're going to demonstrate a little bit of what we do in our choir classroom.
Matthew Boombach, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Lori.
The Steam Cafe is tomorrow night at Hay Camp Brewing Company at 6 p.m. Mountain Time.